Kipşi.
Morning. Another golden, glorious day, huh? Except it's 2 o'clock in the morning to me. I don't know how you people can be this enthusiastic at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know? I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me to your beautiful country. I wish you would have warmed it up a bit before I got here. Where I live, it's 70 degrees all year round, and this would be a national emergency. You know, I keep wanting to burn things everywhere I go. It's nice to see the enthusiasm of this group, all these smiling faces and people willing to get up to come and listen to this stuff this early in the morning. That's very encouraging, you know. I want to let you know right now that I am not an expert on anything, except maybe going to jail. You know, I'm a real expert at ruined relationships and destroying lives and mayhem. I'm real good at all that stuff. And the last few years, I've been learning a new way to live. My sobriety date's May 12th, 1984. And my home group is a closed men's meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous called Robber's Roost. And the majority of my group is all ex-convicts. We figured out one time that between us we have about 500 years in prison. And our goal is to get 500 years in recovery. And we're working hard at it, you know. I was asked to talk about a vision for you, and what I'm going to tell you about is my experience, my strength, and my hope, and actually the beginning and the forming of my home group, which is one of the most active groups in all of Southern California where I live. As a result of my group, people have come from other places, and there's now 6 other home groups modeled after ours. There's one in Atlanta, Georgia, Robber's Roost East. There's one in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, and there's one in Montana and one in Idaho. And I think that says something for my group because it is an attraction. My group started, when I got sober, I had never held a job in my life. And one of the first ridiculous things my sponsor told me to do was to get a job. I told him that I needed to work on my recovery. And he said, no, you need to go to work. And then he made me do really stupid things like pay my bills. I tried to explain to him that, I don't make enough money to pay my bills. They want all my money. And he says, no, they don't want any of your money. They just want theirs. And That was a real novel concept. He told me to be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every single night and to go to work every single day, and that if I would do that, my life would get different. He taught me one of the most powerful words that has changed my life in every area of my life, and it's one of the most powerful words in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's called commitment. See, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know about y'all, but I know about it. I knew I used up every excuse, and I'm good at it. Man, I got an excuse for absolutely anything. I suffer from what I like to call alcoholic. You know, alcoholic is the uncanny ability for a human being to completely rationalize, justify, in many cases even sanctify all of my actions, my reactions, or my inactions while in the pursuit of my pleasure or the avoidance of my pain, you know, and he didn't care about any of that. He said, I want you to be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every night. I want you to get there early. If you can help set up. It's an honor to get to do anything at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, I want you to stand at that door and shake hands with every person that walks in that room. He says, hug the men and shake hands with the women. He says, don't borrow any money from anybody. Don't borrow a cigarette from anybody. Don't tell anybody anything about you unless they ask, you know. And get to know names. And I want you to get up and I want you to call three alcoholics every single day and not the same three. You know, and all these certain things. He says, you have to have a commitment at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, at a book study, at a men's meeting, and a step study at all times. And then he taught me what the word commitment means. He said, commitment as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I tell you I'm going to do something as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's only one excuse for not doing it. You died on the way there. You know? And he was adamant about that. And he said, before you make a commitment, make sure that you have the ability to do it. You know, don't just volunteer for something and set yourself up for failure. But the things he gave me to do, I could do. You know, I didn't know how to work. I'd never done anything, really. And he said, do you know how to pray? And I said, yeah, you've taught me that. He said, get on your knees, tell God that you need to learn a trade, and then go get one. And, you know, it sounded like real hocus-pocus to me. But I got on my knees, and I said, well, God, Charlie says I got to have a job. I'll take whatever you got. And I didn't have a car. In fact, I was told I would never have a license in the United States as long as I lived. And I walked out. I lived right behind this little bar. And I walked out to the street, and I was going to hitchhike into town to get a job. And this pickup rolled up. And the guy rolled down his window and said, hey, you want a job? And scared me to death. Absolutely terrified me. I said, what is it? He goes, it's painting. I said, I don't know how to paint. He says, I'll teach you. I said, I haven't got a car. He says, my shop's around the corner. I'll get you to and from there. And I went, okay. You know? And I went back and I called Charlie. I said, Charlie, I got a job. He goes, what is it? I said, it's painting. He said, that's good. You don't have to think very much. You know? He says, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to work for this man. You're going to make a commitment. You're going to work for him for a minimum of 1 year. You'll do anything he tells you to do as long as it's legal, moral, and ethical. He says, you'll never give him a reason to fire you, and you won't ever ask him what he's paying you for. Whatever he's paying you is a lot more than you're worth, you know? And that's what I did. And I went to work for this company, and it was painting. I don't know how it is here, but where I live, painters are all drunks and drug addicts. You know, it seems to attract a certain type of individual. And it just happened to be that I was the only sober person in a 120-man crew. And on Monday mornings, it looked like county detox, you know. And I'm telling my boss, I'm going, Grant, I can't work here. These guys are drinking. And he says, no, God put you right where he wanted you. And, you know, so I'm with these guys. They all think I'm a narc because, you know, they're getting loaded at lunch and drinking. And I'm sitting by myself reading my big book every day. And one time this guy's giving me a ride home from work. And he looked at me and he said, you're in that A&A, aren't you? And I went, why? Because, yeah, I'm not going to cop to nothing, you know. And he says, you're always smiling, you know. He goes, you don't get loaded with us. You work really hard, you show up, and I've heard about you. I know about your past. I know people that know you. And either you're an AA or you've got a lot of brain damage, one or the other. And I said, well, actually, I have a little bit of both, but why do you ask? And he says, well, you know what? My drinking's really got out of control, and I don't really, I want to come back to AA, but I've done it so many times that I don't want to have to raise my hand again as a newcomer. It's just too... And I said, really? I said, well, I'll tell you what, Steve. I said, why don't you come over to my house on Wednesday night? I live right behind Smitty's, whose name of a bar, little honky-tonk. And I said, come on over, man. Me and you will sit for the next 30 days, and we'll read that book on Wednesday nights. You know, and after 30 days, you can sneak back into AA and you won't have to raise your hand. And he went, and I said, if you change your mind, you can go to the bar and have a drink and you can sleep at my house. You don't even have to drive home. And he said, okay. You know, and so Wednesday night, Steve came over and we started studying that big book, and one drunk talking to another drunk. And Steve started changing. Started being very rapidly. And I started taking Steve through the steps. People at work started noticing this change in Steve. And they said, what are you guys doing? You know, at lunchtime, well, they're getting loaded. We're over here reading our book. And pretty soon there was another guy. And then there was another guy. And then there was another guy. And pretty soon there was 30 men coming off of this track, sitting behind this bar, reading this big book, talking about a God that we don't know nothing about, you know, and trying to hang on to each other all day long at work and keeping in touch with each other, not get drunk. I remember one night this guy pulled up. He worked with us, and he was coming into the bar, and he saw us all sitting back there in a circle. And he came over, and he goes, all right, what's going on, man? He had a six-pack of beer and a joint, you know, and he sits down, and he fires this joint up, and he goes, no. No. Does anybody want a beer? Everybody went, no. And we're sitting there, and pretty soon he's starting to listen to what we're talking about. And he goes, what the hell are you guys doing? And he said, we're having an A&A meeting. And he jumped up and knocked his chair over. You know, he said, God, I'm not that bad, you know. And that meeting, it started so simply. But one of the key things that I always tried to instill in these new men that I was working with were the rock-solid principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, about how important these steps were in our recovery, how important certain action that I'm doing, that becoming responsible for all of my actions, my reactions, my inactions in every area of my life, not just in this meeting, about how I performed at work and how I performed in my community and what I did in my family, that's what this was all about, not about what I said at an AA meeting. And every day we would go out in the real world. We would try to practice these principles and then come back to the next week and we would share what we had learned, you know, and we tried to get a little bit better. And when someone wanted to drink, we would all grab those guys and we would sit with them, you know, and we all started getting sober. That meeting evolved. It's been going on for 18 years now. This is about, the official number is about 120 men, and our average sobriety in that group is about 15 years. We do not sign any court cards or anything like that, but we have a whole section of newcomers in our group at all times, because it has got to find out in our AA community that if you really are serious about getting sober and you're not just looking for the social aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous, that if you come to Robber's Roost, those guys will show you how to stay sober and they'll support you. And they'll be willing to go to absolutely any length to help you stay sober if you're willing to do the work. You see, I have an idea that, and it's just been formed from my experience observing. I've watched so many people die of this disease in 20 years. This program we have is absolutely infallible. It'll work for anybody, anywhere. It doesn't matter what's going on or what's happened. And there's millions and millions of people who need this. But you know what? It's not for them. There's even millions and millions of more people that want this so bad. And it's not for them either. This program is for the people that are willing to go to absolutely any length to do it. This takes a lot of work. It's not a hobby. It's about changing every aspect of my life, the way I conduct myself in this world. Dr. Silkworth explained it very well. He says that we must experience a complete psychic change. Otherwise, if I don't experience that psychic change, I'm condemned to a tragic fate of repeating this thing over and over, ad infinitum. He says, but if we found out that if we do a few simple things, mainly 12 of them, that we will experience a new way of thinking and a new way of acting and a new way of reacting. And I'll learn how to live in this world and the freedom from the bondage of alcohol. You know, the first time I went to an AA meeting and I started listening, and they read the promises. Me and Brian were talking about this last night. And I'm listening to them read the promises. I thought they were talking about alcohol. If you read those promises again, that's exactly what alcohol did for me. Every one of those promises. But unfortunately, alcohol stopped working. And I still needed those promises. I have found that as a result of taking these 12 steps and applying them in every area of my life, that I've got to experience those promises again. My group, The Roost, I'll tell you a few little stories about the unity. See, we don't allow any outside issues to come into our group. We are only there for one thing, the spiritual treatment for a spiritual malady of alcoholism. There's no such thing in my group as an alcoholic addict. You know, that's redundant. We don't chastise anybody, but if when someone new comes in and brings that treatment facility stuff in, we take them aside very lovingly and explain to them, you know, that don't make yourself different. Don't come in this room and tell me that your case is different. Everyone in here has used drugs. Everyone in here has done. We all have sexual issues and every other kind of issue you can have. We don't care about that. We care about alcoholism. That's the only thing we treat. And as a result of treating our alcoholism through the steps, we will address all those other issues. But I don't need to come in here and try to bring any type of controversy into my group. I stick with the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous all times. My group studies the history of AA. You know, I started a little thing with the guys that I sponsor about 17 years ago because I work with a lot of guys. And I'm real busy in every other area of my life. And on Tuesday nights, the men that I sponsor come to my house. And I don't serve them coffee. If they want coffee, they can bring their own, you know. There are no frills. I have a big place, and we sit out in the garden. And 1 week, we'll study a step. And the following week, we study that tradition. And we go back and forth and back and forth. And then we study Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. And then we study Bill, the old-timers. We study the history of Alcoholics Anonymous so that we can learn from the people who came here that made our mistakes and how important the principles that have been learned from the experience of the people that came before us, that we don't have to make the same mistakes that they made. You know, I found that be valuable. I've got a set of the history of every tradition, a certain incident that happened that triggered the reason for that one tradition. And I found that by teaching the guys that when I'm teaching them the traditions, I teach them the history so they have a living example of exactly what that meant. You know, one of my favorite ones is our third tradition. The only requirement is the desire to stop drinking. In the early days, Bill was living upstairs in New York, and was very conservative. These guys were businessmen. They wore suits, and, you know, they were really trying to very, very conservative. And one day a cop brought in this black drag queen with a blonde wig, full dress, drunk out of her mind or his mind or whatever. And he was also a heroin addict. And he walked in this club and all these men, and this is in the 30s, they're going, "Go get Bill." And they went up and they got Bill. And Bill came down, coming down the stairs, and he looked at him and just went, "Whoa." And he sat there and he said the magic word. He said, that when they said, "What are we going to do?" And he looked and he said, "What would the master do?" And he walked down to this gentleman and he asked him, he says, "Do you have a desire to stop drinking alcohol on an all-time basis?" And the guy said, "More than anything in the world." And the guy said, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." You know, That man didn't bring in his sexuality into the group. He didn't bring his drug addiction. He didn't bring any of those other issues. But the man was given a sponsor. And as a result of taking those steps, he addressed those other issues in his life. And he stayed sober the rest of his life. And he became a very successful actor in Broadway. You know, but you know, when we tell those stories, I have a living example. And when I think, hear the third step, I always think of that guy. You know, and I know what that means. The only requirement that I need to come here is a desire to stop drinking. You know, I come in here with a lot of other stuff. We all do. We all come in with a lot of other stuff. But the magic has been to me. And one of the most important things in any group that I've ever been involved in. You know, I hear a lot of people say that, you know, the most important thing in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is the newcomer. I don't believe that. It's been my experience that the most important thing in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is the unity of the group practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous as outlined in this book, because our primary purpose is to carry the message, and either we're going to carry the message or we're going to carry the disease. You know, if we don't have nothing, the pure message of Alcoholics Anonymous to offer the new man walking into this room, we've got nothing to offer that new person. You know, it was told to me by my sponsor that I had a responsibility in Alcoholics Anonymous to help guard these traditions. And it didn't mean I had to be a bleeding deacon or start screaming or yelling or anything. But when I see a tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous being violated in a group, especially in my home group, it was my responsibility to bring it to the attention and at least bring it up for controversy so we can start talking about it, maybe at a steering group, maybe outside of the group or something. But we need to always stay on course. You know, there's a program in business, and it's called... It's very much like AA, and it's called True North. It works on a principle. If you were sailing a boat where I live in San Diego, California, but if you were going to sail to Hawaii and you set a course on that sailboat, if you didn't check your course every single night, if you miss Hawaii by 2 degrees, you'll miss it by 600 miles. I think it's very important that all group do a group inventory at all times to make sure that we are all always headed true north, you know, because it's so easy. It's so easy to allow someone to come into a meeting and they say, I don't want to run the newcomer away. I don't worry too much about that because I know that alcohol will run their rusty ass right back in, you know. I feel it is my duty to always, we only have one thing that works, and it works infallible. It'll work for anybody, anywhere, under any circumstances. But there's a certain process that you must do, and there are no shortcuts, you know. There are no shortcuts. There are things that we must do. There are things that we must do in a group to keep that group at all times headed true north. And I believe that that is so important, that we always keep headed that way, keep doing those inventories. Guard our traditions at all times. We don't need to change anything in AA. I don't believe we need to change anything. It's worked perfectly for a long time. You know, things have really changed in AA. In the short time that I've been here, I've seen so much where I come from, so much influence coming in from outside sources, and nobody wants to say anything because everybody wants to be cool, you know. And I say things. I don't let anyone bring any outside issues into my group, you know. You know, in the 50s, 70 to 80% of everyone that came at Alcoholics Anonymous stayed sober on an all-time basis. Today it's about 5%. You know, what happened? What happened? It was a lot of people, I believe. And I don't blame it on the new people. Not at all. I blame it on the old-timers that allowed it to happen, that allowed Alcoholics Anonymous in many, many areas to get diluted. In the town that I live in, at one time, it was one of the biggest AA groups. We had meetings that had been going on for 40 years that were strong. They were just incredibly strong. The fellowship was strong. And they passed some laws there, and they made it real easy for anyone with anything with drugs, instead of going to jail, they could go to this thing and go to AA. And little meetings that were taken over by a meeting of maybe 30 people all of a sudden had 100 people dropped off at their doorstep, and it just totally overwhelmed every single group. And it destroyed the AA in my group, in my area, just destroyed it. My group, we'd made a conscious decision at the very beginning when we saw it happening. We said, no, we won't participate in this. There was a lot of controversy. A lot of people said, no, you have to do that. I go, no, we don't. We're not affiliated with anybody. We're not signing anything for anybody. There is no reward for sobriety other than sobriety. They can come here, but we're not signing any card. I don't know, you know, all those other meetings died that we're doing, and our meeting is one of the strongest groups going on. And we get a lot of those guys from the treatment centers. But they come there because they want to get sober, you know, not to get something signed. You know, I don't know if any of this makes any sense to you. I have a passion for Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a passion because when I came here, you know what, I'm going to talk tonight and you'll hear a little bit more about it. But when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was in the process of being made a ward of the state of California. And what that meant was that I never had to go to jail again. That they gave me a card to carry around. It would become quite apparent to everybody in this world that I was a danger to myself and others, and I wasn't a criminal. I was just insane. You know, and when I got arrested again, I would go to Patton State Hospital for treatment, I wasn't considered a criminal anymore, and I would get SSI, I would get a check every month, and it was sounding good. And I like mental institutions much better than prison. They care a lot better, you know, but as a result of the sponsorship that I got and the actions that I took, I had to go before that board, not quite a year sober, and they had to make this evaluation on me. And I stayed there for a week in this hospital, and they did constant evaluations on me. And then they had to go back and report to the judge. And the report they gave to the judge was that this man is not the same person that we have treated for many years. That something has happened, and we attribute to the fellowship, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we do not think it necessary to do this. You know, although we do suggest that he have psychiatric treatment for the rest of his life, you know. And that's what I'm talking about. Magical things happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. Things that can't happen anywhere else. You know, we have so many miracles in my home group, and I know there's so many miracles sitting here tonight. Just the fact that you came on Saturday morning to hear some tongue-chewing, babbling idiot from Southern California, you know, entertain you. You know, stuff happens here, but it only happens here when we keep the magic. We keep with our traditions, when we take our steps, when we listen to our sponsors. You know, I love the first tradition where it talks about, you know, unity of the group. The individual is very important and they have every right. You know, and we care. But for the good of the group, you've got to let go of a lot of your old ideas and become willing to surrender to these principles that we know work. We don't need... I know how to drink. I know how to go to jail. I knew how to ruin a marriage. You know, I know how to completely ruin my life. I don't need any help that area. You know, if anyone needs any suggestions, I'm real good at it. You know, the guys want me to be my sponsor. They want to talk to me about marriage. I said, oh, yeah, I've been married 6 times. I'm a great guy. You know, I can tell you how to get a divorce. You know, but Alcoholics Anonymous, the strong sponsorship, the fellowship that I belong to, have taught me how to live in a world that I've never understood. It's taught me how to do things and walk through things that I didn't know it was even possible to do. It's put on a new pair of glasses to allow me to look at this world in a whole new light, the way I've never seen it. I don't know if any of you there's a movie that came out in the United States called Pleasantville. And everything was in black and white. That was my world. Everything was gray. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they taught me the music. And all of a sudden, every day, everything was in color, you know. And I like to keep my life that way, in color. Another enjoyable, lovely day in Iceland, even though I'm freezing my ass off, you know. And that's all I got for you. I'm going to turn it over to our next one.